Hi, this is Bill Teeple, and this is Icon Art Radio with my fellow hosts, fellow S's and fellow men, Donna and Alan. Hi.
Hi, Bill.
Okay, take it away, Donna.
All right, so I was reading about Richard Feynman last week, who is one of the most interesting people. I've never been interested in physics, but he made me interested in physics when I read a book by him one time. And I read this really cool story where he had gotten famous. He was already, he'd already done some renowned things in the world of physics, and he had gotten hired by a particular institution that gave him a job as a professor, and then also gave him a block of free time where he was supposed to just discover something amazing so that their institution would become prestigious through him. And he loved the teaching part, but whenever he had that block of free time, he just felt completely frozen because all this pressure was on him to be great. And all of a sudden one day he just said, I can't go on this way. Really, I don't have the responsibility to live up to other people's expectations of me. I'm just who I am, and all of the things I discovered in the past, I discovered because I was just curious about them and pursued them. And from the time of childhood, that's what he had done. So he decided he was going to throw himself fully into his teaching because he loved doing that and all the work it involved. But in this block of time, he was either going to do nothing or follow some curiosity. And not long after that, he was in the cafeteria in the school, and I don't remember what the circumstances, why the plate was falling through the air, but he watched this plate falling and spinning and wobbling, and he noticed some difference in the speed of, like, one part of the plate was moving at a different rate than another or something like that. I could have those details wrong, but it was something on that level. And he just wanted to find out why that happened. So just on his own time, like he played when he was a child, he pursued that line of of inquiry. And he said that actually was the thing that made him most famous of all, pursuing that. There was a quote in the book. He said, it was effortless. It was easy to play with these things. It was like uncorking a bottle. Everything flowed out effortlessly. I almost tried to resist it. There was no importance to what I was doing, but ultimately, there it was. The diagram and the whole business that I got the Nobel Prize for came from that piddling around with the wobbling plate. So I thought that's a good story to apply to art.
And we've been talking about this same point in different ways for some time, the getting out of the way factor and all of that, and how you achieve that is what we're more as a teacher and more as what we're trying to achieve together as artists in this town, to kind of have a breakthrough mm-hmm. so that something marvelous can happen, has to do with this point. So it's the point that is so important to us. And it's the point that has been brought home to me in my coming to town again in 1998 and deciding I was not going to do any longer what I thought other people thought I should do. I was going to stand there and be myself and see what happened. I mean, literally stand where I am and see what happened and just be myself. And all of the great enjoyment and good that has sort of come out of that as a teacher and as a curator and all the things I've been doing here have come out of that, and they wouldn't have happened. I would never have done any of the things I've done here that seems to be of value as an art teacher and a curator and a coalition builder in the arts, if I hadn't just come to that point. I would have stopped myself, and I would have tried, I would have made something that was somebody else's sort of like way of doing things. And it's just been a very strong point of education for me to have done this, because when I would because I would stand there and I would wait for something to happen. I had no idea what I was going to say about somebody's artwork. So I would stand there, because I didn't know if it was good or bad. I didn't know. If I'm being truthful, I don't know. I can say all these different reasons that other people might say why it's good or it's bad, but my gut feeling was that I didn't know. So then I would stand there and I'd wait and see what happened, and something would come out of my mouth in response to what I was looking at. And those things were helpful and valuable, and there was sort of a magical connection that would take place between me and the student that way. But as soon as I started to think, this is too easy.
Too right, yeah.
I should be doing it the way you're supposed to do it. And then I would try to apply some kind of, like, the way the teacher whose classes I had inherited would have done it. If I went in that direction, well, it all went flat. All the magic and all of the wholeness of the thing that would seem to be happening would go out, and it would just simply be teaching somebody how to draw. It was like, anybody can do this, but this thing that was special around myself and my relationship to the student only happened when I, like, let go completely and just waited for something to happen, which brings us to the Agnes Martin.
Yeah. Yeah, what will I paint?
Yeah. She just waited. She would wait 6 months, if necessary, yeah, for it to come.
Yeah.
Because the other situation, I mean, the source of writer's block or artist block or any kind of block is when you try to do what you just described that you were avoiding. You know, how would the modern art world view this thing that I'm working on right now, or how would my mother view this thing I'm working on right now, or whatever. Even how I, as my inner critic, would relate to it. It's, you just can't help but freeze up when you start doing that.
It's interesting from another point of view, too. We're sort of accustomed to seeing this inhibiting energy coming from how we imagine other people relating to what we're doing and other people criticizing it, or our own inner critic criticizing it. And of course, our own inner critic is probably just a composite of the other people that we would want to like it. But there's another aspect to it that's kind of intrinsic to the process of acquiring a skill in anything. And it comes out nicely in the Feynman thing, because Feynman is looking at how things work. And we all are, to some degree or another, fascinated by seeing how something works. We're fascinated by the way the clouds move around the sun in the late afternoon and make a sunset. And we're fascinated by the God rays that come shooting out of the sky onto the ground when the clouds are just right, and, you know. And so that fascination leads to our attention going on to the mechanics of something. And then you start to develop this sense that if you can control the mechanics, then you can control the something. And it leads us into this trap of trying to control things, and not just, you know, from some sort of perverted point of view, but just, you know, innocently even, developing the conviction that the way to produce something good is to master all of the steps for making the thing good. And we've talked before about how obviously someone with a lot of musical training is going to have an easier time expressing herself making music than someone who has no musical training, because they may not know how to get a sound out of the saxophone or out of the trumpet or something. But at the same time, the actual process of creating something isn't really done by the part of the individual that is tuned into mechanics. The mechanics gets handled, but it gets handled robotically almost. The attention goes on to some inner vision of what it is that's going to be made. And then the attention may go out onto watching the process take place, but there isn't any particular, button that you can push that makes it happen. It's that knowledge moves in the inside, and then a process gets started. And then you get tempted to try and take control of the process and make sure it comes out right, and that, of course, is the beginning of the end.
So there's another thing. When you first started bringing up this thing about the mechanics and how things mm-hmm. work, I thought you were going to go in a completely different direction because that's where my mind went. Mm-hmm. So where my mind went was the direction of being fascinated by how some medium works. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I mainly have painted in gouache for many years, and recently I just went back to oil painting again. And the times when the magic happens for me the most is when I'm intrigued by what does oil paint do? How does oil paint work? And following that curiosity, what will happen if I do this? What will happen if I dilute it this way? What will happen if I mix it with oil and as opposed to mixing it with water? And I think, so the fascination with how things work can have, it's a two-sided coin. You know,
oh,
you can
absolutely.
Get locked into the the control mechanization side of it that can be debilitating, but then you can also go into the other side of losing yourself in experimentation.
Oh, of course. And play is nothing but an expression of fascination.
These are the two sides.
Yeah.
And that's the way I teach. I mm-hmm. teach discipline and I teach freedom for mm-hmm. the flow to take place. And the way I achieve that is I make them doodle. That is, if mm-hmm. you're doodling, it's the most mindless, it's this thing that Feynman decided to do, is to just let go and let his mind, his curiosity go. Mm-hmm. So I teach, I go from one side to the other. And these things have to get married together, this structure and the life itself, which is complete, unbounded, the whatness of the universe flowing in that structure. Mm. And so we're kind of talking about the two sides here. But he was, but we've said this before too, there's a certain amount of accomplishment of your vehicle that has to be achieved, but that's not enough, like you were saying. Mm-hmm. It has to, that is simply the instrument through which, you know, actually higher intelligence can express itself. That is the whole purpose of the universe, expressing itself and finding its fulfillment through you.
As a writer, free writing is similar to the doodling that you have your students do, and Julia Cameron, who wrote The Artist's Way and all of that, the other subsequent books that were such huge sellers, recommends that people write what she calls the morning pages. And it's like, I think it's 3 pages of just like whatever comes. You don't even think about it. And she feels that that just kind of gets the energy moving, your creative energy moving at the beginning of every day, and that it makes a huge difference for whatever you do that follows. And I did that for a while, and it was, you know, after a while I kind of just stopped doing it because I got tired of doing it. And I don't think you have to do it in the morning. I think you can do it something like that at any time of the day. Whenever you feel yourself stuck in anything, you just kind of do anything. It doesn't have to be writing or doodling. It can be cooking. It can be...
The curiosity thing that Feynman mentioned and that you just mentioned seems to be an integral part. It seems like if you allow yourself to be empty for a few moments, what the natural tendency of the mind and the intellect is curiosity. It's going to start to seek out. It's not going to seek out. It's simply going to be in its simple state. It's going to become fascinated with what's going on. And naturally want to flow in a direction.
Yeah, Leonardo da Vinci felt like curiosity was the most important motivator mm-hmm. in existence, and look where it took him. We've all just looked at Alan. Your turn, Alan.
Ah, da Vinci. Well, if you're lucky, then you'll be curious and fascinated by the things which, when you pursue them, will lead to the skills you need, to produce things later on. And that's, you know, one of the things that you sort of have to confront as you approach choosing an art or choosing a creative area to get involved in. a lot of people, for example, want to be musicians, and in some cases, and to a certain extent, you know, this was my own experience, I wanted to be a musician. I wanted to be able to play certain instruments and certain kinds of music on them. Actually, what I really wanted to be able to do was play Beethoven piano concerti. And I discovered that I had the potential to be able to play Beethoven piano concertos without any, you know, particular magic in being involved. But what would be required was many years of extremely diligent practice. And I began to realize that my appreciation for the music led me to wish I could play it and want to participate in the process somehow and become part of that music. But it was not a fascination with watching my skills as a keyboard artist expand in microscopic increments day after day, year after year. So I found myself kind of consciously deciding that when it comes to Chopin and Beethoven and other, you know, wonderful piano music, I'm going to be an audience. I'm not going to be a musician. Now, it didn't stop me from continuing to love music and continuing to explore music, and I've been playing music my entire life, but it was an interesting conscious decision somewhere, you know, 25, 35 years ago when I realized that I didn't want to devote that much of my life to acquiring the skill to be able to do certain things.
That's a good point. I think that brings up a really interesting point about being true to your own natural tendencies. Mm-hmm. It relates to the Richard Feynman thing, too, about not being what other people expect you to be, because somebody can have talent in a certain... When I was a little kid, my dad was a musician, and he gave us all music lessons, and my sister took to piano, and she still plays the piano today. I didn't like it at all for the same reason that, you know, I just saw that it's going to take me forever to get where I wanted to get. And it took me decades to realize that my curiosity went in so many different directions that I was never going to focus on one thing and become a master at it. Just, I couldn't do it.
Tell me about it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. You're the same kind of person. And luckily, when I had children, I had two children, one of each kind. My son is just like me. He's just curious about a zillion different things, and he goes in all these different directions and has a wonderful time pursuing all these things. My daughter has been like a laser beam in one specific direction from the age of about three, and she's never wavered. And they're both wonderful. So it's made me realize that there's no superiority or inferiority here in mm-hmm. styles of creativity. And the important thing is to just be true to whatever, whether it's a multifaceted direction or a one-pointed direction. Mm-hmm. Doesn't
but
matter.
If anything, your discipline or your practice should be in finding the flow or the way for you to be completely yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And,
even
and
if it's like...
That's difficult because you can easily decide early on that you're going to be a piano player because you like music so much, and then you spend the rest of your life trying to master Chopin or Beethoven.
Yeah.
And it's, you just, it's, it may not be you.
Or you wind up feeling, which I did for many decades, you wind up feeling bad about yourself and feeling that you're flaky because you haven't focused on one thing, any of those things that you liked, you know, and you've never focused on them and mastered them and made a lot of money in any one direction. And so it's hard not to, in our society, to not feel that there's something wrong with you if you're like that, because people are always asking you, well, what do you do?
Where
as
do I start?
It's, right. And expecting you to have one career, you know, and if you don't, it's hard to know what to say, how to answer that question.
Well, yeah. I mean, apart from the problem of not knowing what to say, I love being interested in everything. Mm-hmm. And I remember my dear mother saying to me one time, I just wish you'd find something you could do that would be easier for me to explain to people. And I thought, my God, she's asking me to pick a career on the basis of what's easy to explain to her neighbors. You know, does she realize what she just said to me? Mm. And it shocked me. I was pretty young at the time, so I was easily shocked by things like that. But it's, you know, it's true. I met someone today at lunch and we had a wonderful conversation, but when he said, what do you do? I was stumped. I didn't know where to begin. So I started rattling off things that I did, and after a while he was kind of looking at me like I was, you know, you do too many things, don't you? And it's not, you know, it's not like you do them all at once, but it's
or
a marvelous, well, yeah, in some cases, I mean, I sort of cycle through them.
Yeah.
But it's a marvelous thing to be able to have the opportunity to see what's magical about dozens of different things. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was the whole point of the core courses in the curriculum that Maharishi designed for MIU, was to take each one of the major disciplines and have some proponent of that field of knowledge stand up for 1 week and just get the entire class focused on why he or she found it so utterly fascinating mm. to be a physicist or to be a historian or to be an art history, you know, mm-hmm. student or whatever. And that the whole point of that was to give everybody a chance to be fascinated by everything, and they would pick the ones that were, you know, that were yeah. right for them.
Yeah, it's sparky. I mean, that works for me, even if I'm flipping through television channels mm-hmm. to see what's on, you know. I mean, something can come on that I never would have chosen if I'd looked at a listing. The other day, I was flipping through the channels, and I hit the Weather Channel, and there was this incredible story about people who had survived extreme storms, and I was... I've always been interested in weather anyway and storms, and this was just like the best footage of huge waves and shipwrecks and things like that. And there were true stories. And
I love
I was
a good
riveted,
shipwreck.
Absolutely riveted by this. But the thing you were saying about doing things one at a time or doing things all at once, again, it took me a long time to realize that it was okay to work at my natural style of working, which is to have 15 different projects going on simultaneously and being in the middle of all of them mm-hmm. instead of feeling like I had to, no, I have to finish this painting before I start another one. I have to finish this story yeah. before I start another one.
Yeah.
But I don't work at my best that way. And so.
Yeah. For me, I think one of the reasons I work that way is because after a certain amount of focus in a particular area, that phenomenon of control does begin to right. emerge. It's sort of hard to avoid. You start thinking, oh, I could just get that to fit there, then it would be perfect. And I find myself starting to force it.
Exactly.
And so
yeah.
then I just switch to, and the magic is gone, and when the magic goes, I feel that mm-hmm. immediately. So I switch to something else that feels new and exciting. And then as that fades, I switch back to the first one or to one of the other 15 things that are going on.
Well,
so
I think Da Vinci had the same problem,
yeah.
if I understand correctly.
Uh-huh.
You know, that people wanted him to finish the paintings. It took him so long to do them.
Yeah.
And he wanted to go and play around with mechanical devices
yeah, right.
and catapults. And I mean, he was interested in everything.
Yeah.
And it was a real serious problem for other people, I think, that yeah. he was that way. But, I mean, who is looked at as more the example of the most intelligent, highest person in history?
There's a wonderful children's book about Leonardo da Vinci where it talks about, you know, his father watched him when he was really small and he was always studying plants and little things on the ground, and he said, oh, my son's going to be a botanist. And then his father would go away on a trip and come back, and his son was building little things. You know, oh, he's going to be an architect, you know. And every time he came back from a trip in the storybook, little Leonardo is doing some other little thing, and always amazingly. And finally, of course, as the story progresses, it dawns on the father that my son's going to be a genius.
Well, or just
a very well-made
an eclectic
book.
Person. Yeah.
Right, right.
I mean, being scattered is not that much different from
from
being a genius. You know, what's relevant is whether you're doing something that you know takes you to another level, that mm-hmm. gets you more understanding of what you're really doing. And of course, it doesn't have to involve multiple things, and it doesn't have to involve anything that's technically defined as being creative, because it's pretty hard not to be creative if you're doing anything.
So what does that take? A direction towards some feels right? I mean, it seems like we're talking about what's the difference? I mean, well, let me put it this way. What's the difference between the scattered person who's just sort of banging around and the person whose curiosity is leading him somewhere?
I think that there's a pretty decent rule of thumb or benchmark test that can be applied, and that is, does he ever come back to the things that he leaves? If you do come back to finish things and you do get them done, then that's very different from just starting a whole bunch of things and never finishing anything. Mm-hmm. Because taking something all the way to completion is an experience in itself. It's a very different experience than just having a cool idea and telling everybody how cool it would be to do this, and then maybe buying, you know, all of the aquarium equipment you could possibly use so that you're able to build this super fabulous aquarium setup, and then you kind of never get around to doing it. And I've known people who do that too. They change careers every 6 months and they get set up for the new career, but then they don't actually want to do that. And part of it may just be that they're afraid, like we've talked about today, they're afraid of admitting that they're interested in 15 different things, and then they've sort of shamed themselves into not coming back to the thing they were doing a year ago, when in fact they'd probably be very happy to come back to it and do some more of it.
But perhaps the motivation is coming from some different place of just kind of a wild momentary impulse instead of genuine curiosity about how does that work?
Yeah, no, there's something about that's why I say direction.
Yeah.
We may have to take this up in next week's show at the rate we're going here.
Yeah.
So goodbye all. Thanks for listening.
See you next week.
Tune in next week.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.